Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome and thank you very much for participating in our fourth class in our Teen Tween series. For those who are just joining us, if this is your first time, welcome. I hope you find it helpful. And if you look at my YouTube channel, it's just Yaakov Horowitz is the name on the YouTube channel. I just made, Sunday, I made a 50-minute video, 5-0, that condenses the short version of the first three sessions. I encourage you to have a look at them if that's what, you know, if you want to get into this. The big idea is the series is titled Mentor, Supervisor, or Both, Guiding Your Teens and Tweens into Adulthood. I want to thank Michael and Estelle Stein for very, very graciously sponsoring these talks. And the big idea is we're talking about our roles, trying to be as reflective as possible, thinking about what our roles are as parents. Are we a supervisor, meaning we're there to make rules and make sure those rules are kept and keep our kids in line? Or are we mentoring? Are we actually looking to not just have that short-term impact, which a supervisor does, and when the supervisor's role is over, it really ends? Or are we trying to mentor our children? And mentoring means it's not a little bit different, it's a different world. Mentoring means that you're developing a relationship where you hope that your mentee, in this case your teenager or young adult, will come to you for advice. That's a whole different experience and requires a very different set of parenting skills. So we're going to be talking, we've been speaking about that before up until now, and these classes were purposely structured so that we start with theory, meaning why are adolescents? Well, they're going through physical changes, they're going through emotional changes, the front part of their brain that had the brakes, so to speak, is not developed. So all of these things, of course, impact how they behave. Then we explored different components of parenting. And now we're gonna get to the next, these three sessions, we're actually gonna be really rolling up our sleeves and getting to the issues of the day, which are technology, religion, faith, bitachon. We're doing a piece on, hopefully an entire session six will be about, which I call the answer key, which is trying to explore and figure out, chas v'shalom, God forbid, if things are not working well in your child's life, how to get the answer key to figure out what's going on. But tonight we're going to be talking about technology, and we're going to be utilizing some of the learning tools that we picked up in the first three sessions. Again, so if you're joining us, I hope you gain as much as you can out of this. If this is your first time, everything is on my YouTube channel, which is Yaakov Horowitz. And I really encourage you to take the deep dive, which we call this. This is our deep dive series. We're really getting into it where you have the tools yourself. That's really my goal, is to empower you to understand things yourself so that we can really effectively raise the children. Okay? I sent out a survey. I was very glad for 40 of you responded. And, you know, I just encourage you to think of it this way. The purpose of this survey is not to assume that I know what all of you are thinking, but to get an honest opinion. Now, I did it in a way that it was anonymous, so you didn't have to feel uncomfortable saying that, you know, you didn't like a certain part or you'd like something done differently. But I'm a big believer in getting feedback. And I would like you think about extrapolating from this, getting feedback from your kids when you make rules on technology, when you're talking about any other issue that relates to parenting. So we had four questions. I cannot say that I expected exactly this. And like I said, it's really helpful to find out from you what I could be doing to better help you. You're the customers here. I'm just the delivery. I'm the Uber Eats. I'm bringing the food to you. Now, you're the customer, and I want to make sure that you're happy and you're getting what you want. So the first question, the first one was style. I gained most from the presentations. If the first choice was left out the anecdotes. Don't tell me any masalach, you know, just give it to me straight. Not many people said that. Some, you see, as you see, the rest was split between keep it the way it is. If you look here, these are the questions, right? Keep things with the first sessions with some stories, and some are actually put more stories in. Research, was research helpful? That was the question. I did quote, I call them Yankees, you know, things that I think of on my own, and the research is supported by professional surveys and studies. So there was clearly an appreciation for the research. The hey Rabbi, we trust you was the fourth choice. You can look through them here. And the so that was, I was glad to see that. And this was very interesting in the Q&A policy. I what we did in the past, which you cannot do tonight because of the Zoom bombing, was the first one was please don't take any questions during the presentation. What I did until now, the first three sessions, I said that if you have a question for clarity, what did you mean, Rabbi Horowitz, when you said this? Can you clarify what you meant? That I took during the class, and the Q&A, I said, is at the end. And that seemed to be the way you folks decided. And the speech length, presentation length is 40 and 60 minutes. I guess 50 or so would be the right. I'm not sure we're going to get to there tonight because I really want to take your questions, and I really want to finish my presentation before we get there. Okay, so let's get started. If you remember during the first class, we started with this mahalach, with this approach. Even though I so strongly believe that theory is important, I do feel that it's helpful if you start thinking about these things in a practical sense. So tonight is about technology. So we have four scenarios here that by the time we're done, you know, we'll be addressing all of them. Excuse me. Sorry, the plug went out. You want to see someone panic, you worry about the computer crashing. Okay, so scenario number one is we think our son is too young to have a smartphone. He says, everyone else has it. How many of you heard that? Scenario two is I wish we could set up technology rules with our kids that actually work. Everything becomes an argument, everything. We're constantly fighting over everything. Is it possible, can we set something up that would be more manageable in the first place where we don't have to, you know, constantly be bickering about this? Should I check up? I wrote Snoop, excuse me, I just on my son, daughter's emails, text, social media. Is that a good thing to do? I have a very strong opinion on this one. We'll get to that soon. Meaning when checkup, that means not that we told you in advance, but I just like kind of grab your phone when it's around and take a look when you're in school, when the child's in school. And this is a really tough one. And I probably won't do that much of it, but I imagine it'll come up there in Q&A. This is a big deal. You know, we don't agree with our school's technology policy. What do we tell our children? And how should we deal with this? You know, and it's, these are all four very real scenarios. And we're beginning with this in, again, begin with the end in mind. The end is I'd like to, by the time we break tonight, I would love for you to be able to have tools on your own to figure these things out, to be able to figure out what to respond when everyone else has it, or how to craft your policy so that it's congruent with the people in your neighborhood, you know, the folks, your friends, and their, much more importantly, their friends, set up technology rules, how to supervise, snooping, supervise, what does that look like? And your child, the school's technology policy. Okay, so my overall theory on this, the big idea is I would suggest that the components of an effective technology plan for your family should include these three components. And we're gonna break them down, go through each of these, and then we'll get to your questions. So as I, again, this is a Yankee, this isn't the research. I always say Yankee means this is just my thinking. And then I'll show you things, I always show you in reference what professional research shows to be true. But this is my own thing, okay? So excuse me, I refer to this as postpone, protect, prepare. Three separate phases, and they each cover a certain time period in the children's lives. And I encourage you to think about each of them separately. I have found in my experience that a lot of the very wonderful talks about technology that are given focus on the first two. I personally feel that more thought should be given to the prepare thing than is given currently. I'll explain the reason to you. So postpone means just delay as long as you reasonably possible. To delay the time when your children will have access to technology. Obviously, you know, it would be fair to say that if you can postpone a bit, that's one in the win column, because they have to be mature enough and to be able to manage it properly. Protect is supervise that technology use. Protect them, so the postpone period is over. You've introduced them to technology. Now comes the protect phase, where you supervise their use, all the while realizing that the prepare phase is coming when that you won't be able to protect them anymore, because they're going to do it either behind your back, or they'll be old enough to manage their own technology. So are you teaching your children to make good choices? And that's a very different kettle of fish than those first two, which are very different, as we'll see. Okay, now I'm going to draw back on a lesson that we discussed in session three about the four types of parenting. And we're going to talk about how it affects these, again, going back to this, these three components, postpone, protect, prepare. How does this fit into these parenting styles? I'll use my cursor, okay, on the upper left side right here, authoritarian sets lots of rules and is rigid. It's not that they're good at saying things, but they're not good at listening. In other words, they're not really seeing what their rules, how it affects the children. And is it accomplishing what I want, or is it just, you know, my way because I'm the boss? So I'm the boss, but we had three, if you want to look it up, I encourage you to look it up. I touched upon it when I did that review on Sunday. Or so authoritarian means mostly focused on authority. Obedience, punishment over discipline. Basically, I'm the boss, I said so, you got to trust me, that's the way it is. Authoritative is they know they're the authority, but they're open to feedback, and they do enforce their rules, but they work on relationships also. So meaning that they do make demands on the children, they do have expectations, and at the same time, they're flexible and listen to see how is it working with the children. They're very in touch with the children's feelings, even though they are exerting their authority as a parent. Permissive, lower left as you're looking at it, very in touch with the children's feelings, but not very well done with the rules. So that's permissive. And uninvolved, unfortunately, is that they neither paying attention to the children that much nor making rules. Now, obviously, I'm a little biased, but I think the authoritative is the way to go, where you do put the blend and the balance, and the research does show that authoritative parents, that type of parenting skill brings out the best results, certainly in the long term and usually in the short term. Forgive me, you know, I try to lighten it up. We have in the research, and excuse me, the survey, it said that I should tell you some stories. Here's a good one. And it really does go back to the authoritarian and authoritative. And I'll be turning 61 in a month. It's just putting it out there. So my parents' generation were typically authoritarian. Doesn't mean they were bad, chas v'shalom. They just dealt with it a certain way, especially if they're European parents. Typically, you know, this is what we're doing. You got to listen. You're my child. There are, you know, in if you were raised this way, especially in my personally, my parents, I think, had a lot of authoritative also. But the style was much more like, you know, we sat at the table when we didn't think we were supposed to have conversation, you know, mix in when my parents were talking to their friends. It was just different. So if you were raised this way and you used to, you know, they say if you have, if all you have is a hammer, everything starts looking like a nail. So if you're authoritarian, basically the only tool you have in your toolbox is the rule. I said so, that's the way it's got to be. This is a true story. I'm not, chas v'shalom, God forbid, making light of this serious situation, but it was pretty remarkable. True story. I came home one evening a few years ago, and my wife told me, Yaki, please, after dinner, please call this fellow back. He's having a terrible time. What happened? He described to my wife the way his teenager locked himself in his room, and he literally trashed everything, the furniture, he kicked holes in the sheetrock, was destroying all appliances, whatever was up there, he was just making a holy terror. The parents were terrified of going into the room, and the father called me and asked me what to do. So I said, well, what precipitated this? What happened? So the father tells me, he said, I took away my son's phone. So I said, did he do anything wrong with the phone? As I asked him, I said, well, what did he do with the phone that got you upset? So he said, no, it had nothing to do with the phone. He opened the mouth to my wife. He gave her an attitude. So I said, so why'd you take away his phone? What does the phone have to do with it? If he gave your wife an attitude, talk to him about it, or give him some form of discipline, or whatever. Why? What does the phone have to do with this? So why'd you take away his phone? So he says, Rabbi Horowitz, it makes him crazy. I promise you, he said those words. It makes him crazy. Like, it's so effective that it makes him crazy. And my reaction in my head, I think my best recollection is that I said something more polite than really, or you got to be kidding, or do you know what you just called me about? Okay, so that's an authoritarian move that, you know, typically is not that effective, and the people often aren't in touch to realize that they're saying these rules and it makes sense to them, but it might not be having that effect. You might not see the room being trashed. You might see, you know, other things being trashed inside your child. So let's go back. We talked about these three things, excuse me, postpone, protect, prepare. Okay, postpone as long as you can, protect, and prepare them. So let's talk about each of them, and let's go. So obviously, I don't know, I know some of you, but I don't know, you know, there was no way that I could tell you exactly, you know, 8.5 years old or 12 or whatever, 15 is the time to start with this. So I'm gonna try to give you general rules so that you can adapt them and think about it in a way. So one way, again, I'm working my way through this slide. One way to think about it is, when they're at a point where they might or will access technology behind your back, this is a Yankee, not a research thing. I believe that the time when they're ready to do it behind your back, that's the time to see that they do it with supervision. And that's pretty logical. I mean, it's better if you come at this to this knowledge before they do it behind your back. And what happens is, in the real world, what it looks like is children really would like to follow our rules. But especially in the area of technology, if the rules are, they feel they're not fair or they can't live with them, then they're more likely to risk getting in trouble. And they'll just, you know, hope not to get caught. If they get caught, they'll deal with it. As one of my friends, when we were in ninth grade, a few boys, young men of our group did some things they shouldn't have been doing at the time. And one of the group got sent to the Rosh Yeshiva, to the dean of the school. And he asked him, he said, why'd you do this? And the Rosh Yeshiva did not like this suggestion that much, but we thought it was a pretty good line. The Rosh Yeshiva did not. He said, listen, Rosh Yeshiva, one thing I found out about the yeshiva here is that it's much easier to ask for mechila, to beg for forgiveness, than to get rishus, than to get permission. So that's something I think about when kids decide to just take the law into their own hands. So if your rules or if the situation is such that it's not in sync, and the children, again, especially today, because they go to school or their peers are all talking about technology devices, and that becomes the conversation, and you feel like totally like a loser and left out. If sooner or later it's going to bust, and they're just going to do it behind your back, and then you'll never know anything about anything. So you ask yourself, can he or she do it without my knowing? Or think of it differently. At what age would a child be likely to be able to access technology? I wish I could solicit feedback. Sorry, we can't though, later. But I'd be interested in hearing your take on this. Think to yourself, at what age could a child, think about your own children, at what age could a son or daughter of yours get a hold of a technology device, a tablet, a phone, whatever it is, a smartphone, and you'll never know about it? What is that age that the kids can get access to technology and you'll never know about it? And I propose to you that whatever you're thinking, it's getting younger and younger all the time. So here are some variables that I encourage you to think about what that age is as you're crafting your policy and thinking about these things. Think about what that age is. And these are some variables, the norms of your community, meaning what do most of or many or most of the kids in the community, what are they doing with this? What is the norm? When do most kids, many or most kids, have access to technology? What are the norms? Forget the entire community, their peer group, their classmates. You know, one of the things we talked about in sessions number one and two is that as children go through adolescence, their peers have a much larger role in their lives than before. And very frankly, you know, having had this chus, the merit to raise 5 children and see them as, you know, accomplished, Baruch Hashem, wonderful adults, there's a time in their life where if they have to pick peers or parents, then, you know, you're always going to be there. Very often they do go to the peers. So if those peers have technology and they don't, it's an issue. And your child's personality, is he or she, I call it a rule follower or a rule breaker? Is there natural, for those of you who heard our daughter, Sarah, last week talk about the way she's a rule breaker, and she said she got that from her father, right? You know, that again, getting up at an Agoda convention and speaking about child abuse or teens at risk, you gotta be a little bit of a rule breaker to do that. So I hope you channel it to good things, but your child is basically born with this nature. So here's a practical way that I have you think about this. Imagine, this is just my mind wandering, but think of it this way. Here's a way to think about it. Close your eyes for a moment and imagine that your son or daughter is in a sixth grade classroom or any classroom, and the teacher is giving out instructions for a science report. And the teacher says, okay, when you hand this report in to me, I want 3 pages, tell them what it's about. I want you to have, the paper has to have a heading on it. On the left side, you write your name and the subject. On the right side, you write my name and the date. And you can lose 5 points if it's not exactly done like this. Now, rule followers, most people will just say, okay, yeah, sure, no problem. You take your notes, how do you want it again? This one, right? Then you got a couple of smart alecks that'll say, kind of silly, she doesn't know her own name. Well, what am I writing? This is ridiculous. Why am I wasting time on this nonsense? The whole point of it is to do the science, okay? And then you have real smart alecks, that's like the soft ones, and then the real rule breakers will wind up switching the numbers around to write the Babe Ruth or, you know, LeBron James or Mickey Mouse. So think of your child. What's your child likely to do when something like that comes? So it's a package. You delay as long as you can, but if you're tempting them to break the rules, or you're putting them in a position where they almost feel that they have to break the rules because they just don't want to go without this, then you have no supervision at all and a great deal of animosity because your children are upset that their friends have things that they don't. So again, you postpone as long as you can. This is my advice to you for how to think about it. So you postpone, and then you protect. And this is the protect part. Beforehand, I'll just tell you an anecdote, a really incredible story. An iPod dintar is what I call it. A 13-year-old student of mine, years ago, he was a talmid of my yeshiva, and he was quarreling with his parents for months. I don't remember the technology device du jour, you know, what was popular at the time. I think it was some sort of game with an internet piece, but whatever it was, they've been arguing about it for months. And the kid got so fed up. He was an eighth grader in our yeshiva, and he had been in yeshiva since kindergarten. And he burst out to his parents and says, "Yeah, let's go to Rabbi Horowitz. If he agrees with you, then I won't bother you anymore. But if he agrees with me, you got to get it." I thought it was pretty cute that they came to me. You know, I wouldn't have gone to my principal, let me tell you. But anyway, they came to the house, and it just worked out that way because of some, I'll tell you in a moment, but I saw the results of how that worked, and it really changed the way I thought about technology. And I encourage you to perhaps think about maybe this is an approach to this protect thing. You know, I was writing up an agreement. What happened was basically, I gave my Talmud 5 index cards, and I gave his parents 5 index cards. And I told my Talmud, "Listen, Yankee, I'd like you to write down on the cards, take 5 cards and write why your parents are concerned about you having this. Why would your parents not want you to have this technology device? 5 different reasons. Just write them up. Your parents will work on the same thing. Let's compare afterwards and see if you guys are in sync with each other." And sure enough, they very, very, very much in sync, you know, which is important. And his parents wrote, he wrote and they wrote, you know, that they're afraid of pornographic content, you know, inappropriate content. Not going to do my homework. You're going to get weird and do this day and night. You might get cyberbullied. Okay, so the parents wrote some things like that, and he wrote things like that. When they finished, I gave my Talmud his parents' cards. I said, "Look, these are the ones that matter." Okay, I said, "Flip each one over and write a solution on the back. What are you going to do to allay the fears of your parents? This is what your parents are concerned about. What are you going to do to help it not be an issue?" I said, "As soon as we're done, if your parents sign off on this and you come up with a consequence, if you don't listen to the rules, go straight to the Verizon store." And the kid said, he was all excited, and he started making his own rules. And he said, like, for example, I don't remember the exact details, but it was something like this. You know, "Are you worried about doing the homework? Here's the deal. When I come home, I won't be able to touch it. I'll be able to use it for 20 minutes. And after that, I have to do my homework, and then I can have it back again. And you can make hours for it. You're worried about cyberbullying? You can, you know, I'll take a class. I'll go to a class on it. You can put a filter on. You're worried about inappropriate content? You can have access to my." And he wrote up a list of 5. I showed it to the parents, and the parents were pretty okay with it. And then I said, "What's the consequence?" So the kid said on his own, he said, "If I don't listen to this, you can take away my phone for 2 months." Now, you took my trash in your room for taking away a phone for a day. Try taking away a phone for 2 months from a kid and see how that one goes. But the kid made the rules. I got this idea from, a few weeks before this Din Torah, you know, Din Torah is a rabbinic court. Din means law, Torah is the Torah. So Din Torah is a judgment that's given according to laws of the Torah. Okay, so they came to me for, you know, I read a study that really fascinated me, and it said that it makes a lot of sense that workplace rules are 7 times more likely to be followed if the workers have input. Okay, so that means like this. That means that if I'm the boss and I go to the secretaries of my yeshiva, there are 4 secretaries throughout the week, and I sit down with them and I say, "Listen, the phone's going on voicemail. I want this to be more personalized. The yeshiva, I want the phone picked up by the 3rd ring. And here's the plan I came up with last night. And I take a sheet of paper that I worked on for 5 hours. And I said, here's the rotation of how it's going to work." So that's one way of doing it. The other way of doing it is where I explain the big idea. I say, "Look, that's the big idea. I don't want this. I want this yeshiva to have a flavor of a small out-of-town yeshiva, and I want that phone picked up, please, by the third ring. Now, why don't you four get together, work out a plan, bring it to me, and if it's good, we're good to go. You guys figure it out. You know your routines better than I do. So the first one is rules that the boss made, and the second one are rules that had input from the employees. Research shows that it's 7 times more likely to be followed, which is logical. 7 startled me, but you know, I would certainly have said it's more likely to be followed, but they're 7 times more likely to be followed. And I said, why don't we do this? Why don't I apply this in my yeshiva when we're having difficulty? The kids are asking for more yard access, some more this, some more that. Why don't I let them have a little more autonomy in creating their own school rules? And then when this came up, I did it. It actually worked beautifully. And I actually had a real discussion with them about trust. If I have time, maybe we'll get to it later, or if you'd like to hear about it during Q&A, feel free to. I'm just trying to get in within the window of the presentation, especially since I can't take any questions. But we did have a discussion with him and his parents about trust. I'll give you the punchline. At the end of it, I told him, I said, you know, you're 13 now, Yankee, whatever his name was, Yankee. I said, you're 13 now. Let me tell you, you want adolescence in a nutshell? Your parents think you're 6, you think you're 21, okay? I said, you know when you become 21? When your parents trust you. So make sure you don't lose their trust. I had a discussion, I'll be glad to go through it in the Q&A. So that's the big idea as I see in terms of protecting. First of all, do you get it? Meaning, do you really understand today's technology? When I've done this workshop, you know, dozens of times, maybe hundreds of times over the last, you know, 15, 20 years. And I usually ask parents to raise their hand if they feel they know more about technology than the children. Who knows more about technology? And you usually have 3-4 outliers that raise their hands and everybody else says, are you kidding? How could you supervise somebody? How are you going to protect them if you don't understand what's going on? Come on, be real, right? So how could you possibly supervise kids if you don't understand technology? And I don't want to guilt you as parents, but you know, if you're in my stage in life and your kids are out of the house, keep your AOL address, you know, whatever. But if you have kids at home, you really need to know what's going on. And it constantly changes. I would say I'm not completely up to date on everything the way I need to be or should be. With my chinuch, you know, with my educator's hat, not as a parent. So try to do your best to go to, and go to technology, go to a class, have somebody in your neighborhood who's a real techie, get up and speak to them. When I speak to, when yeshivas or communities ask me to come in and talk about technology, what I usually say, the next one who should get up and speak is that fellow who raised the hand. You know, he or she who raised the hand when I said, do you know more than your kids? Get them up here and let them tell you about what's going on. Ask a 20-year-old kid what's really going on in today's technology. You'll flip when you hear about it, the constant changing of the apps. Now, clearly explain the terms of your supervision. And it's really important. Think, again, I gave you an iPad Dentara story to think about it that way. But however you do it, make sure that you'll always adjust. But make sure that your message is clear and you're precise about what your rules are. Supervise, don't snoop. One of the questions, right, was my children. One of the questions was, should I snoop on my kids? Don't ever, God forbid, don't ever snoop on your kids. It's terrible. First of all, I just spoke about trust now. Are you kidding? This is like the biggest violation of trust if you take their phone when they think that they have a right to privacy. You should supervise, meaning you tell them, look, as long as you have a phone, you're in this house, I have a right to look at your phone. You don't like it, you're not getting the phone. Or you work it out as part of your ground rules. And you know, one thing I found helpful when you tell children is you say that this is a temporary thing. I found the best analogy for this. I did not put it in the presentation. Feel free to, you know, make a note or think about it. Explaining usually in driving an automobile, driving a car. You say, like, you know, there are different phases. At the beginning, you know, you can only drive in a parking lot. And then you can drive, you know, with a permit. You get a permit, you can drive with somebody next to you, and but not at night, not with people in the car. And, you know, eventually you get around till the end, which is driving in Manhattan where lane markers are just suggestions, right? So you go through these phases. I think it's very, very helpful if you tell the children, this is not going to be like this forever. You have to build up trust. And eventually we'll be delighted to let you supervise yourself. Consequence, not punishment. You know, make the punishment fit the crime, not like I take away your phone because it makes you crazy, but rather if it's part of that agreement in the first place, that's wonderful. A collaborative rulemaking was what we just talked about with the app, with the Dentura and the research on workplace rules, how much more likely they are to be followed. Okay, so far we did, you know, postpone with a thought towards don't be in a position where your children, you know, are going to be tempted to violate your rules because it's just cumbersome. They can't live like this. And protect is supervise them. Make sure you understand it. You know, there are a lot of programs today that you can, you know, put filters on and screens. Look, you're a parent, you got to know this. Nothing is foolproof. And the kids tend to, you know, really find out quickly how to work. Some kids tend to work their way around it. But that shouldn't stop you from doing it. You know, it's a good message to give the children, and you should, and you certainly should see to it that there are filters, knowing fully well that it's not foolproof, that it's not completely foolproof, but it is very helpful. Now, this, if you wrote, you have a look here where my cursor is here from last class, you know, we talked about when you have a goal, you know, what's it going to cost you to get it? What's it going to cost you to, if you have a goal in your house that you want your children to be comfortable in your home, it's going to cost you money, privacy, and time, and sometimes even your standards, right? So what is it going to cost you to be involved in really properly protecting your children? If you really, in other words, if all you're going to do is like be a policeman for them, but if you really want to have that dialogue where they discuss things with you, again, you see on top here, this third category. This is also a Yankee thing. I'm going to show you some research soon, but this is how I think about it. And I think it's so important. And I really encourage you to challenge me during question and answer to really, you know, work through this whole thing. So the third category means that typically when kids ask us, can I watch this movie? Can I use this, whatever, using this device to do something? In all likelihood, it's very possible that it's not something that's gonna thrill you. So the two choices would be either yes or no. I propose to you that if you're gonna do this properly, you're gonna have to have a third category. And that it, not have to, it'll work best if you have a third category. And the third category sounds something like, I'm really not thrilled about this, but I'm glad that you asked me and you can watch it because we discussed it, even if I'm not delighted with it. Because truth be told, let's say it's watching a video or a movie. Likelihood is not that they're gonna ask you about, you know, Uncle Moshe and the Mitzvah Man. You know, they're gonna come up with something that's a little bit skating on the edge. And if you watched the whole movie, you probably would find some parts that you weren't thrilled about. Doesn't mean it's terrible, but it's not something that you would pick as a first choice. Here we go back to what we spoke about before. If you're going to stick to yes or no's, and most things will probably be a no, then sooner or later, they're going to try and ask for mechila. They're going to ask you for forgiveness if they get caught, rather than coming to you for permission if it's going to be no. So this is, again, if you notice, the advice that I'm trying to share with you isn't specific in telling you this is what you should do. I don't believe in that. But I'm encouraging you to think about it in these terms. There's a third category, and the third category is, it's sort of in between. And I propose to you that probably much of your experiences in having these discussions with your children, they're going to wind up being third category things. And the advantage of doing this is that you're keeping the dialogue open and that you know what's going on in their life. They have no supervision if they're doing stuff behind your back. So again, if you have a compliant child, if you have a rule follower, go for it. You know, then you probably can get away with it to some degree. But you have to know your children and you have to know what's really going on. Okay, and let's talk about prepare, and then we'll be ready for your questions. We'll do some, I'll share some research with you and give you some things to look up if you'd like to. So prepare is really, you know, what we talked about these all 3 weeks about supervisor and mentor, and Ravol Bazria Ubinyan, planting and building, where building is an inorganic situation where you're just piling up bricks, but nothing grows beyond it, and planting is messy and takes longer and is more work, but you wind up at the end with something, you know, tangible, and it grows beyond the time. Preparing your children to make good choices has nothing to do with those previous two things. Postpone and prepare do nothing, postpone and protect really do nothing to help them make good choices. So just a little anecdote. Rabbi Noach Orlowick, who's a tremendous Talmud Chacham and a wonderful educator, lives in Yerushalayim. We're very dear friends. We see each other once in 5-10 years, but I mean, literally, we finish each other's sentences. We were at an Aguda convention together. We were presenting together. Rabbi Shmuel Kamenetsky Shlita was the postlik there, the, you know, rabbinic advisor there, and Rabbi Orlowick and I were, and a therapist, were talking about technology. And he just walked in off a plane from Israel, and someone asked him a question about, this was a long time ago when, you know, phones and smartphones didn't exist, but they weren't that ubiquitous as they are now. And someone said, what do you think about having what should parents do about technology? And it was just so Rabbi Orlowick, who, by the way, he was one of the closest, you remember this one, he was Rabbi Shlomo Volba's closest Talmidim. Closest students and really absorb this whole planting and building thing. So he said on the spot, he said, and I encourage parents, really think about this. He said, imagine taking a diabetic child to a wedding. Okay, you have 5 children, you have a 12-year-old that has diabetes. Now, it's a family, it's your brother's wedding, whole family's going. Your child is gonna be wandering around where everything in that room almost is not gonna be good for their well-being. Now you could be a supervisor, right? You could say, don't, you can't have any food, like none of that junk. Now you decide if you think that's gonna work on that. If you have a rule follower, maybe. You have a rule breaker, forget it. So what you do is you explain things. You talk about the health and how blood sugar works and what diabetes is and why you're taking insulin and all of that. And make, this is what Rabbi Orlowick said, explain everything, let them ask you questions, and make sure they have a good meal before they leave the house. And Rabbi Orlowick said that the corollary of that for parents is that explain to your children why you don't want, what your concerns are. Don't just say it's a terrible thing. Explain to them what those 5 things on the index card. And he said about happy homes, make sure your kids love to be home and make sure it's the type of home that kids love to be in. And we spoke, I believe last week or 2 weeks ago, about your 15-year-old daughter going to Israel in 3 years. I like to draw on things that we've discussed earlier as they relate to other things that we're talking about now. So think about a 15-year-old daughter. So you have a 15-year-old daughter, she's going to Israel in 3 years. What are you doing right now when she's 15 to prepare her to make good choices in Israel when you're 6,000 miles away? And no matter the best school in the world, you need, you know, they can get into trouble if they want to. So that's the big idea. Talk about things, prepare them. Take Rabbi Orlowick's lesson about the diabetic. I think that's, of all the things that I've heard in this space, I think it's the clearest and the most perfect analogy to this whole technology. The kids are out, they're surrounded by stuff around them that's not good for them. Education helps, meaning really talking, listening, let them ask you questions. Now, take this back now. You're talking to a diabetic child and you say, you know, the sugar's not good for you, it's this and that, and that, you know, whatever. And the child has a question that they're not answering. They're afraid how you're going to react, or that you didn't give them time, or you're on your phone and, you know, you're not giving them your attention. If they have a question that they can't ask you, they're much more likely to eat it, the stuff that's not good for them. So it's education, it's talking to them, listening to them, and seeing that they're well fed, and seeing that, you know, that your home is as happy as it could be. Congruence, and then we're done with the research. This is just, I covered those other three things that we talked about, right? Those initial, beginning with the end in mind, we talked about you know, about rules, about, you know, how to set up a set of rules, and everything's an argument. You know, the thing about the if the school rules are different than mine, than our home, I'm going to speak about this briefly for a minute, and I'll be glad to take more of it during Q&A. And I really think it's important that you be consistent and don't ask your kids to do something that you're not doing yourself. It's very, very difficult to do this. If anyone wants to hear, ask me during Q&A for a thought, a Torah thought of Rav Shimon Schwab on this that's really beautiful and profound. I'm almost out of time, so I'll leave that for later. And there's a story I'll be glad to share with you about my wife and I when one of our children was in a school where the rules didn't fit our lifestyle. You know, we didn't agree with the rules of the school and how we dealt with it as parents. I'll be glad to share either one of those with you. But this issue of congruence, I believe that if you don't, not matching the, if you, the school's rules are not aligned with your life, you should not be sending them to that school. Really, 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 it's so confusing, and it's so counterproductive. It's so confusing to children that you know, you're telling them basically that they shouldn't listen to their principal. So send them to a different school, especially you know, and if you're living in a place where there are options of schools. But I'll be glad to discuss those two parts with you. Just some research. Again, you can refer back to YouTube and look it over again if you want to go through it more carefully. The teens' views on social media's effect. They had the positive, neither positive. The kids were saying what's positive and what's negative. Just parenthetically, there's some excellent work done by Dr. Eli Shapiro. Dr. Eli Shapiro, if you go on my YouTube page, I've been doing a series of tools for living and parenting. I interviewed Dr. Shapiro. This is very relevant for this class. He did a lot of work. He calls it digital citizenship. Okay, so just look up Dr. Eli Shapiro. His website will come up. I think it's something, Dr. Eli Shapiro, that something. But he did some great research on, he interviewed like over 2,000 yeshiva students, boys and girls, you know, Dati Lumi, Maron Orthodox, and Haredi. And his research was very interesting. And his digital citizenship idea, the big idea is that create rules for teach children how to be citizens of the internet. That's the big idea. Okay, so the kids had these mixed views. 65% of parents worried that the teens are spending too much time. This is what the majority of parents were concerned. They're worried about, you know, these different things, losing ability to communicate in person, sharing too much about their life online. These were the concerns that their parents had. Listen to this one. A majority of, I found this very interesting, that parents got pretty positive ratings more than any other group in terms of keeping them safe, what parents are doing to keep their kids safe. And you know, this is also a really important thing. You know, I mentioned this a few times in previous classes, that that the kids get it, and the children understand when we set limits that are reasonable, that we're really doing it in their favor. And here we go. Parents themselves struggle with device distractions. Nothing new to us. Okay, so these are some of the best practices. Again, that technology is just it just is what it is. Try to speak to your children about technology. I had the great schuss, the privilege of hanging out with a few of our grandchildren this week. If you look at my Facebook page, there's a picture of walking off the golf course last night with our grandson. So we have a preteen, just almost teenage granddaughter, and I asked her some questions about technology and what she thought about the rules, and it was absolutely fascinating. I was thinking about sharing some of it and decided not to, but it was fascinating to listen to an articulate child talk about it. Listen to your kids, ask them what they think of the technology rules. Look how that survey that I did at the beginning got me a better understanding of what you want from me. Check with the customers. You remember those maitre d's or the owners of the restaurant that come around and ask you how the restaurants, remember that pre-COVID, right? You know, come around, how's dinner going? So think of it like that. You know, think of it in those terms that you're looking at your customers and finding out what's going on. Pay attention to what matters to them. Ask why. Negotiate, like we talked about, right? Make agreements with them. Boundaries. Be flexible. Kids aren't the same. Situations change. And you know, it's like I mentioned earlier that it's like a generation gap every 2 years, you know, so whatever rules you made with the previous child are almost irrelevant by the time they get to them. One thing, the Kaiser Institute, which is very family oriented, did a whole study a number of years ago on technology use. And from the time the study started till the time it ended, two major platforms were invented, so to speak, were rolled out. And the guy who wrote the report said that this report is basically obsolete because we didn't factor in those things. And be the adult. Ultimately, remember we spoke about this last week? Only the boss negotiates. Only the boss negotiates. So feel comfortable, you know, reminding yourself that the kids, once as long as they're negotiating with you, that means that you're in the driver's seat. You can look up these folks in terms of research and writing. And remember, only the boss negotiates. They're negotiating with you. That means you're in control. So don't be try not to be authoritarian. Be authoritative. Have the confidence to listen and have an open mind. And I really, really hope you found this helpful. We're going to open up to Q&A now. I hope we can make this work. I really appreciate Bela Barkanay, did I pronounce that right? Graciously volunteered, responded to my request to do a Chesky tonight. Chesky was unavailable. He sends his regards to everyone. So if you want to raise a digital hand, on most platforms have a little digital hand there. That's really the only way we can do it because we can't communicate. So please raise your hands. And Mrs. Barkanay, please, if you can, unmute them and open up their video so we can have a conversation. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. I'm going to take it off screen share, and let's just have a good time. Go ahead.
Okay, so Ariella Schuchman.
Yep, hi.
Thank you. Hi, Ariella. How are you?
I really appreciate it.
Sure, thank you. Hope you found it helpful.
It is. It's very helpful. My question is, with the postpone strategy that you talked about with the three steps and how we get to postpone, would that same idea also work or be needed for when the teenagers want to introduce social media? And what are your thoughts about Instagram, Snapchat, and social media that's not necessarily what we're looking for, but what the teens feel they need to connect with?
It's exactly the same process, the same thinking, you know, and you know, that's why there is no one rule, right? Because it depends on the child's temperament and it depends on what their friends are doing. Again, you know, just imagine what it's like to come into class and the majority of the children are talking, let's say, about what they saw on Instagram. Now, you may or may not like it, of course. Right. And your kid comes in and says, oh, you're saying news meters the Shabbos. You know, that dog ain't gonna hunt, right? Okay, so I'm saying it's mirrors are beautiful, please. In other words, understand the reality. If this is where the children are, you know, and a lot of times, truthfully, parents get like sticker shock. Like you move into a certain neighborhood because you like your friends and you're like, and let's say that neighborhood is a little more progressive, And now the kids are doing things that you're not comfortable with. And you say, hey, whoa, whoa, I didn't sign up for this. Whoa, I'm moving back to whatever, fill in the blank, right? That's not the way it works. You know, you made a decision. This is where you put your children in school. And the grass is always greener on the other side. You may go to the other place and the parents are all clueless and say, oh, Baruch Hashem, my kids aren't, you know, aren't using any of this stuff. And then maybe using it more without supervision. This is the process, I believe, I would encourage you to do every step of the way. And what we talked about, third category, was named Ariel, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is the third category.
Prepare.
I noticed that grimace. No. I meant the third category. Yes, no, and I don't like it, but I'm going to like it.
Oh, okay, fine.
I was watching your face when you said the word Instagram.
Well, yeah, it's
something like, you know, twitching, right?
Yeah.
That's the third category. I'm okay. Not comfortable. I really don't like this.
Okay.
But
I'm glad you asked.
But I'm glad you asked. And because you asked, we're going to talk about it. Okay. Now, you may make the case that it's too progressive. And by the way, just like I did not mention, and I probably should have, in all those variables, you as a parent are a variable, right? Some people just, this doesn't work for them. I propose that because of the nature of technology, I say, look, I believe that every generation has its challenges. You know, with all the talk about kids abandoning religion, it's a tiny fraction of the kids who abandoned religion 100 years ago. Even in Yerushalayim, with those holy people who were the Tamidim of the Bashan, the Gra and the Bashan Tov, you know, they had 50-70% of the kids, you know, were abandoning religion. You know, every generation has its challenges. This is, you can overcome this. And the best way to do it is to have real communication where you talk about things and you're opening, mostly listening. Let the kids talk to you. And yeah, that's it. Thank
Would
you.
Snapchat be any different? I'm just curious. Or it's the same?
It's well, yeah, Snapchat is more concerning because the stuff disappears, right?
That's what I was wondering.
All right. So that's why what do you think they invented it for, right? I'm saying this is all part of it.
Okay.
And by the way, I said about, you know, do you get it? You know, parents, all of you, not just Ariella, all of you, please don't forward to your children. I'm begging you. Don't forward them the stuff that your mother-in-law sends you on the family WhatsApp group about these corny lines that I remember when online was when you were actually on a line. Remember that? You know, you're hanging up a sign. I don't get it. Don't talk to me. I'm clueless. That's really, really what you're saying. I don't mean you. I don't mean you. I'm telling all of you parents. I love your mother-in-law. It's good. It's all good. But I'm saying I was kibitzing with that part. But don't say things. Nobody talks anymore. Texting, schmexting. What happened to? I promise you, when phones came out, I'm sure people said the same thing. And if you went to the caves in Egypt and read the hieroglyphics, it probably said, tell the kids to knock it off and lower the music. You know, this is every generation felt that the next generation is going to pass. I believe this is so since the beginning of time. I spoke at a Sheva, at a Shal Shuras, one of our married children. You should all be zeichet to get there. You know, they say, grandchildren are God's reward for not strangling your teenagers. Okay, so I'm saying, like, I went to the shul there and I spoke to the Ushal Shuras, and they just opened a new shul. And I spoke to the kids. I was talking about the importance of a shul. But I told them, I said, my generation thinks your generation is, you know, like, busy with the phone or whatever. And, you know, and my parents' generation thought that about us. And you see, Baruch Hashem, we have five married kids, they're great kids. And we're making mistakes like everybody makes. They're good kids, they have good values, they have great friends. You have to be confident that, you know, part of this, what I said about, you have to have self-confidence that you can help your kids through this. Go. Anybody else? Next.
Did you raise your hand?
Yes. You're unmuted by the host.
Hi.
Go ahead. Anybody?
Go ahead now.
Do you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Okay, great. Thank you. So what if you have a 15, 16-year-old who you already gave a phone to and were naive and whatever and didn't make these rules?
And we really... I got four emails like that today. I got 4 emails from parents saying, could you please talk about what happens when we made, you know, we didn't do this rule thing, and now we have sticker shock that we didn't, you know, we had buyer's remorse or whatever you want to call it.
So, and I feel like if I bring up anything, they're going to be like, well, you don't trust us. Why don't you trust us? Yeah. So, any ideas?
I would say very, very gradually. Don't, you know, don't come home and say, Horowitz said, you know, like overnight, you know, you got to have rules in the contract. You'll freak him out. You know, true story, I had a teenager. I still see his face in front of me years and years ago. He said, my parents, like, they're so erratic. That every year they go to the Aguda convention and they come home and they say, we're throwing out all the TVs. You can't make kids crazy. But what you could do, perhaps, I would suggest, that card technique, I don't see why it shouldn't work now. In other words, you say, look, I'm not taking your phone away, of course not. But here are some of my, here are some cards that have my concerns. Let's talk about it. What do you think you could do? I don't want you to get cyberbullied, God forbid. You know, I don't wanna, whatever. I want you to have good friend, you know, social network and this and that. I want you to do hobbies. Here are my concerns. What do you think we could possibly, what could you do to make me more comfortable so that I shouldn't be thinking, you know, of what's going on? And have a conversation about it. Maybe you could work something out. You know, it's not like you're redoing. I think it could be a good way to start. Just because you didn't do it at the beginning doesn't mean that you can't have a conversation about it. As so long as you're not saying, okay, give me your phone and now we'll talk. That's not going to work for sure. But I for all of you that are thinking like that, I think it's healthy to have a conversation like that. To listen, I love you very much. It's not that I don't trust you, but and you know, but I just want to know about this. And I want to tell you, you know, that's why you got to let kids ask you questions. I had this in my own yeshiva. The point I'm going to just do this quickly because I want to take other questions. But I called a parent meeting in our yeshiva before the summer. And at the time, a lot of the kids were getting their own email addresses. And when we crafted the rules of the yeshiva, email wasn't that, you know, you had to have an AOL account and pay for it. And it was a different arrangement. And all of a sudden, Gmail came out or other stuff came. The kids were getting, and I wasn't comfortable with it. And I called a parent meeting at the end of the yeshiva, the last day after, like right now, after the last day yeshiva. And I said, look, parents, the kids are not old enough to have their own email addresses. I suggest that we do family emails, like Horowitz family@gmail.com. And people should write the child's subject name in the subject line, write the kid's name. This is Bianchi. And like this, there's some supervision. The children should, anyway. So a woman raised her hand. And she said, her heart, and I told the parents, I said, I'm telling you now, because if you don't like this rule, there's other yeshivas in town. I'm not chasrum sending you away, but this, you have to be able to do this. Anyway, parent raised a hand and said, her heart, could you please sell this to the kids? Could you please sell this? You'll do a good job. You know, I'm afraid to go home and talk to them. So I said, who wants to sponsor donuts and whatever it was? So somebody raised their hand right away. Oh, great. As long as you're doing this. So we opened up Rabbi Radinsky Shul, and I had like the middle school kids, I think 5th to 8th grade. And I told them about this rule and how I said, you can ask me anything. I promise you, it's not going to be disrespectful. I know I'm your manal. I know Adin, whatever. I know you respect me. It's okay. Ask me anything. And one of the kids said, hey, Rabbi, what? You don't trust us? You think we're thieves? You think it's, that's how you think we're going to, what's the matter? You know, he said it very politely, but, and I told him, maybe it wasn't, you know, I thought it was a good answer. I told him, look, you're all gone. I said, the Torah has rules of yichud, that you're not supposed to isolate yourself with other women. I said, if I have a meeting with your mother, my house, 9 o'clock at night is not where we do it, or in the school building that's empty. So I said, you don't trust me? The Torah doesn't trust, the Torah thinks that I'm doing a terrible thing. I said, me, Yanki Horowitz, I'm the Menal Shlita. I have rules also. So it doesn't mean we don't trust you. It means that because we trust you, you need some boundaries. So I'm saying, like, you don't need to feel that you ran out of runway. Just go and have a conversation that's more organic, that Rav Volbl would be proud of. You can do that really at any time. Go ahead, folks, carry away.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Don't feel shy. If you have a life, feel free to go. I'm glad to stay and answer questions. Go.
Hey,
hi, how are you?
Hello. If the one asking the question, Bela, if you're the one asking the question is visible, could you click them and
Hello? Hello?
Yep.
Hi, it's Shira.
If you're asking the question, if you're okay with being seen, so I would ask you to just engage.
I'm not able to be seen right now.
That's perfectly fine. Then don't.
It's late at night.
I get it.
I'm sorry.
What do you guys know, right? Go ahead.
I wanted to know what you said before about the issue of having different views of technology as your kids' school. So that's a little complicated, first of all, because we talked previously about choosing a school that you think your child's emotional needs will be most met. And sometimes if you have a kid that's like a little bit more of what my daughter calls a special snowflake, who maybe needs a little more extra.
What is the word you said, a special?
She calls herself a special snowflake. She says, me and my friends were special snowflakes. Like, you know, your kid's a little more unique or artsy or whatever. Sometimes those kind of schools are the ones that are a little more hands-off about technology.
Hands-off or hands-on?
Like my husband says that they're not 50 years behind, but they're 10 years behind. Like, they still think technology is like the best thing you can give a kid. And you have to let them explore it.
They're too open about it.
But like, he feels like even the more progressive schools nowadays are more aware of, like, there's limits,
right? Are you feel the school is too permissive?
No, we like the progressiveness in general. I just feel like they are a little bit, they're a little behind when it comes to like realizing that like maybe everybody TikToking in the bathroom isn't like the best idea, you know.
So you're saying that the school is too lax.
They'll send a year and a half after all the parents I just want to know about that everyone's on TikTok, they'll send out an email about how to be careful about TikTok.
Right, but I'm saying,
how public is this, by the way? Is this going like on public YouTube?
yeah.
Can we like take away my name, bleep it out?
Yeah, 1 second. Maybe you can coach you, Mrs. Stern. Maybe you can coach them on what to say. Tell her what to say. I'm asking for Aviva. Go ahead. You say it.
She's asking for her friend's hobby.
There you go. I think if your children are attending a school, when I crafted the rules of our yeshiva, I told the parents of the yeshiva, I said, you know, we had 190 families at the time, Josh being one of them. How you doing? And I used to tell the parents that the only way I could craft a policy for an institution and have all families agree completely would be if I took over an orphanage. Right?
Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry?
It makes sense.
That's what I said. I said, I don't want you to be robots. You all have opinions. And I would be shocked if you know, in line with what the yeshiva's policy is. All I ask is that while you're in the school, you respect the rules of the school, and it's a good message to your children. And if you undermine it by saying, Rabbi Horowitz didn't really mean that email thing. He was talking about something else. The kids know what I meant. And you're really telling them, don't worry about the old guy. Forget about it.
This is different. This is more like having rules that they're not necessarily having, but they're not like, you have to use TikTok. They're just maybe a little late to telling the kids to be careful about it. And I'm like, right, on top of things.
That's the most parents have the other issue with the schools that they feel are too strict. If you want to, if you want to invest some time and go speak to someone in the school, maybe a guidance counselor or something else, or I found that when approaching a school and you want to get some movement, usually if you approach it and you say something like, look, this really, I think this is an issue. Maybe we could do some parent education about this. I'll be glad to try to raise a few dollars towards it. I don't think any principal will brush you off if you come like that, rather than say, what's with the school's policy? What are you guys thinking? So maybe talk about it. Look, I know, I see what's going on. I'm concerned. Don't make a whole fuss out of it, but offer your help. If you want to do a parent education evening, I'll be glad to help set up the tables. You know, I'll be glad to put together some money for the program or something like that. Talk to them, try it. You might be surprised. Okay, go ahead, next.
Okay, Lisa, you're unmuted.
What do you recommend for coming to an agreement on the amount of screen time that children have? You know, whatever we might say, obviously, 15-year-old child might not agree with. How do you...
Might?
Don't. And if they find ways to get around it, what do you recommend for how to...
You'll work something out. That's the big idea here. The big idea is that if your child says that, you know, 4 hours a day is fine for me, and you say, whoa, you know, there's a whole world out there, then you work something out. You just negotiate it out. It's just that simple, you know. And a 15-year-old is at the outer limit of that time where they're gonna do stuff behind your back. I would say, I'm not kidding you. If I was a kid today, I would have my own phone at 7 or 8 already. Okay, so I'm saying, like, a 15-year-old that's not interested, that your rules are not working, I would say the majority of them will just go and do whatever they do on their own by then. So talk about it. And you know something?
I just find it's often, you know, no matter what our idea is, it's not, of course, there shouldn't be a restriction on the amount of time.
Make it more interactive. Make it more interactive and say, like, what's your idea for this? What do you think is fair? Talk it over and negotiate. Look, let me ask you. Let's look at it a different way. How long is the shelf life on this? How long is it till you have no say whatsoever?
Right, not that long.
Not that long, right?
Right.
So even if you're making a whole fuss about this, it's a big fuss that's going to strain your relationship about something that in a year or two is moot. So what are you making? You know what I'm saying?
Right. I think just even now, when there's no school, no camp, it's just the tougher.
By the way,
the whole day of
whatever rules, you know, it's not going to be that easy doing a reset after COVID. You know, you're sitting around all day, and we're all going to have to deal with this in one way or another in our own personal lives. And you know, I put on a pair of shoes for the first time 2 days ago. So I had a meeting on my back. I'm not kidding. I'm not going barefoot. I'm saying I'm wearing these ratty sneakers or whatever it is. That was the first time I put on a pair of shoes was 2 days ago, since before Purim. You know? So it's like, you know, all of these things are going to change. It's a very big thing. And you know, remember, if you watched that first session, I had that slide of the people waiting online to, you know, at the security. We're all like that now. Your kids are like this now. Not a great time for you to make, you know, to be pulling, to yanking in control with your 15-year-old right now. So just make it interactive and realize, again, what's the shelf life on this? Rav Vogel would say probably that, you know, it's less of a shelf life. Make sure your relationship is strong. That's gonna be much more of a predictor. Go ahead, folks.
Thank you.
Okay, Leah Wilroth. Leah, you unmuted?
Sure. Yeah, I think I am. Hi.
Hello.
Okay, so I am one of those very fortunate single mothers. I have Kanainahara 4 kids, but they are very spread out in ages, most of them. Mm-hmm. My oldest is Kanainahara. She just turned 19. And obviously, technologically, she's very advanced and has very few rules. I'm sorry?
I said you have some rules?
Yeah, definitely. You know, as one of the other people was discussing, I do not, even at this age, allow her to have Snapchat. Yeah, and she she's very respectful about listening to that. Probably because
rule follower.
I'm sorry?
Rule follower or rule breaker?
No, she's definitely a rule breaker, but I choose wisely what.
Then call a kavod. Then you know, I always tell parents that when you have the authoritative rather than the authoritarian, the great thing about that is that you have a couple of these cards in your pocket that you can yank out every once in a while and say, this is a no. And it usually sticks. I always say that you have a couple of cards in your pocket and you hang on to them because something's going to come along that's going to really be important to you. And if you're looking, I didn't mention in the presentation, but I always tell parents that that's a plus, is that you have these couple of cards in your pocket. If the Snapchat is one for you, then you yanked it out and you said, look, sweetheart, you know I let you do all kinds of stuff. Snapchat's not happening. And then usually they listen because you've built up a reservoir of trust and understanding. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Baruch Hashem, we definitely have that going.
What was the question about the difference?
My question is, I have a 14-year-old and a almost 12-year-old, and they complain that their 19-year-old sister has more lenient rules than they do. They're kind of ignoring the fact that they're so much younger than she is.
Right. That's what you tell them. I promise you, you'll have the same rules.
Okay.
Maybe that common analogy is a good one. You know, you say, look, this is the way it goes. So I think you're good. I mean, I think that's a fair way to go.
Okay, I muted her because there's a lot of background noise. Do you want to hear from Esther Diskin?
Sure. Did I finish with my mom who just with the 19-year-old?
Okay, let me see.
Are we done? Did I answer your question?
She disappeared.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, I told you.
Yeah, I apologize. My 4-year-old is awake and not being quiet. So
my mother was a single mom for 2 years. So I stand up for you.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead. Next.
Okay, Esther Diskin, 16. Sorry.
Hi. So I have a 14-year-old who thankfully has.
You're in the UK now?
No, I'm in Australia.
Oh, is that yesterday or tomorrow? I never get that
one. It's tomorrow. It's Wednesday lunchtime.
Okay. Yeah, because look, whatever. I say, if you're in the UK, that's I should stand up for you. Okay,
yeah. Come on. No. Anyway, so I have a 14-year-old daughter who I'm on the one hand very blessed that she understands that Snapchat and Instagram and TikTok, she thinks in her very teenage mind, are absolutely stupid and time wasters. So I'm grateful for that. The one point of contention that we've had in the last couple of years is WhatsApp. And I might be behind many other parents in this department, but it's been something that has been a concern for me because I know, I mean, even when you look at, you know, WhatsApp changing the rules of what can be forwarded to how many people, particularly in the last, you know, under the COVID situation of, you know, that that the power of, you know, that the spreading of information and going viral is, you know, beyond our comprehension even. And my concern is that I'm trying to negotiate with her literally in the last few days. She's desperate for it. She feels left out. All her classmates, I put that in quotation marks, have it. But at the same time, I feel I'm not so much worried about what she's going to post, but more about what she's going to be receiving. And when you're being bombarded by friends sending you every bit of drivel that they're, you know, forwarding on at the click of a button, you know, there's the time wasting aspect of it. There's, you know, just, you know, being a passive receiver of all of this rubbish. And, you know, like, and I'm sure she's sharing it with her friends, you know, regardless, but it's like in a lower scale. And I just feel like once I let her onto that WhatsApp arena, I'm opening her up to this entire world of viral sharing. And so, I guess I'm trying to negotiate. Sorry.
No. So here's one thing. You know, you mentioned about time wasting and about, usually, you know, when a parent calls me and says, should I let my child go to the pizza shop Matzah Shabbos, or, you know, whatever, 12 o'clock at night? So I say, you didn't finish the question. What happens if you say no? Right? You didn't give me the whole story right now. You just asked, should they go there? That's not the question in isolation. Is your relationship strong enough to absorb a couple of blows, like saying no to something they want to do? And what are they going to do if you say no? Like, okay, so when you said about time wasting, right? If your child is doing well in school and they're functioning properly and the life is okay, you know, with how they're doing, then time wasting, what would you rather she do? Go out and, you know, with a bunch of friends and wherever they're going?
I'm saying, to be honest, like Baruch Hashem, she has good friends, and I would personally rather she spend time with her friends in a healthy, wholesome way. I just feel like, to be honest, like in terms of schooling, for example, like we're in the middle of the school year now and we've just gone back after COVID, and COVID was a really difficult time for her. She struggled. She's Baruch Hashem, she's academically very bright, but she struggled with maintaining motivation and all of those things. And I guess my fear is that, you know, she wants to be part of the chevra, but at the same time, I just fear that the things, you know, business before pleasure, like she's not, you know, I have an inbox full of incompleted assignments. And
look, I don't know the culture down under. By the way, just for the record, you know, I don't like speaking on platforms with these guys from the UK or South Africa or Australia, because they open their mouth, they sound like 15 points more of an IQ than me. You know, as soon as they start, well, actually, I was the rubbish, you know, like that. Like, and I'm sort of, you know what I mean?
No, no, no. Don't feel bad. You're a wealth of wisdom. I'm really grateful to hear from you.
Thank you. So look, I overall, I don't think it's a winning strategy to deny her something that all her friends are doing. I don't see how this ends well. Mamanashach, as we say in the yeshiva world. Either you trust her or you don't. If you trust her, then you have to trust that she'll be able to weed out things that aren't appropriate and know when she doesn't belong, you know, what chats or what things she should remove herself from. If all her friends are, if even half of her friends or 60% of her friends are on a WhatsApp group, WhatsApp is the tamest of the bunch. I know you can send garbage, any rubbish, you know, anyway, it's just, I don't see a winning strategy holding back something from that everybody's doing. You know, this is going to really cost you. You know, you're putting, I said, you're pulling out a card, you know, when you have one, this is costing you 10 cards right now.
Okay.
There's only 14 right now. You don't know what's coming down here we would say the turnpike. What do you say in Australia?
Highway.
The highway. So I'm saying, so like, you don't know what's coming down the road. You need all the cards you got. So I don't think it's a winning strategy.
Okay, I'm glad to hear from somebody with a better understanding than I do. She's my oldest, so it's my first rodeo.
Well, you should have, I wish you mazel and bracha. By the time the third kid, teenager comes along, you can write your own book about it.
Thank you for your advice.
My pleasure. Go ahead, please. Anybody else? We'll take a couple more, folks. Anybody else?
Gabrielle Marizadeh. You have to unmute yourself, Gabrielle.
Yep. Got it. Perfect. Hello.
Hi, Rabbi Shalom. Thank you so much for this. It's been very, very helpful. The question is alongside what Esther just asked. We have a very responsible, very mature 9-year-old.
I wasn't following the bouncing ball with the names. Esther was south.
Yes. Our child is much younger. She's very responsible. She's an amazing girl, but she's about 9 years old. And since COVID, I feel like all her friends are a little bit getting more distance, because obviously they're not spending a lot of quality time together. So it's been about a few months that they're all on this Facebook chat that I hear is like, you can have parental control. There are like features that you can make sure nothing fishy happens. But at the same time, she knows about it, but she hasn't asked to be on it. It's our feeling that maybe all her friends now are getting together and talking about things.
And she's losing
September,
out. And she's losing
they're
out.
They're going to have...
When she comes back, she's going to regret that.
Exactly.
So have a conversation with her about it. If you want to be bold enough to talk to her about it and say, ask her how she feels about it. And certainly if you're bringing it up, then you can certainly put rules in for her. I think that would get you a lot of cards back, you know, it gives you a look, if how do you know she's not on it now? What filters do you have? Do you have a keystroke filter? She doesn't have a phone.
She doesn't have a phone.
She doesn't even have a phone. How many kids out of what percentage of her class does?
Almost all her close friends. There's a group of 8, 7 of them.
So only one doesn't.
Only one doesn't, and my daughter, so 2. Okay.
I think you should talk to her. I think if you're bold enough to do it, sit down and talk to her and ask her how she feels about it. And maybe you work. Maybe there's a workaround, you know. The truth is that there's enough good, you really can have a good handle on what your child is doing online. You know, if you educate yourself, you know, you could have a pretty good handle of what they're doing. And I think what you always want to do is tell your children that if you feel uncomfortable, if somebody makes you uncomfortable online, or if you feel, you can always tell us no matter what. You know, last session 3, you know, the previous one we talked about, you know, would your kids tell you, you know, how to set up a relationship where they talk to you. I didn't say it during the talk, but that's what I was thinking about. I had a picture of a truck running down the hill and, you know, going down the mountain and being able to, when you set up things like this, that kids can talk to you about anything, it gives you it's such a protection for them and for a comfort for you as a parent. That's probably more important than any of these other things. So if you reached out to her and you said, look, sweetheart, how do you feel about this? Is it bothering you? Tell us, let's talk about it. We're open to listening. I mean, my goodness, if I was a kid, I would, you know, if you were my mother, I would bow down to you.
Thank you so much.
I think it's a good conversation because it probably will come up pretty soon. Point. What?
It will come out at some point, if not now, next year, the year after.
To initiate it. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, there's no more questions. Anyone else has a question?
I see a hand up. Mrs. Solomon, is that a hand? I see one hand. Then we'll call it a night or morning tomorrow. What's two? Shia, what's two? Two questions. Okay.
Yeah.
Leila, I wanted to thank you very much for your service. We really appreciate it. Did anybody, you don't have a question? Yeah, Ellen Solomon. You see him?
She has to unmute herself.
Okay, there we go.
Go ahead.
Hey. Yes. Hello from Israel.
That's Mesiris Nefesh.
Actually, I had the good fortune to wake up earlier than I wanted to, and I said, oh, look, I can go live this time. So, hi.
Sure.
Wondering how much to explain the danger, our son's 14. How much to explain the dangers of pornography, or even just over-associating with girls and pictures, supposedly innocent pictures. I think that's, I don't know if you're planning to cover that in another class, but there's always that debate of how much information to give.
Well, I didn't specifically plan on bringing that up, but so your question is having the talk, like, is that what you're talking about overall about?
I don't know. There are a lot of talks in that subject.
Have you had, you know, a conversation with him about puberty and his body and you? Yeah, are you married? Your husband?
General. Yeah, yeah.
You did? Okay, good. Yes. No, I'm saying it's important to I think it's important that it's really awkward. One of the things I'd love to do before I hang up my sneakers, shoes, whatever. You know, I really wanted to write a book helping parents. They have good ones for
girls, for mothers to speak to their girls about puberty and body change and all of this, but I really wanted to write one for fathers or mothers to speak to the boys about the changing bodies and puberty and all of this. It's such a big deal, and most of, you know, we get all clumsy, and for girls, it's just physiologically, it's usually an easier conversation, and you're forced to do it because they, you know, they get the period, you have to do, you know, boys, you can theoretically not talk about it. So I think it's a broader conversation, not just about technology and about the access to inappropriate content. It's really a broader conversation about their bodies and how they're changing and what it means. And, you know, like I said, many parents are not, you know, I started teaching, oh my goodness, 40 years ago, 39 years ago. And, you know, this stuff, I was teaching eighth grade. So, you know, a lot of times Rashi or the Chumash or Gemara talks about things related to sexuality in some form. So I asked a few rabbeim, like, how do you deal with this, right? So the old school skipped it, you know? And I always felt that it's better just to have a mild conversation. And so I asked a couple of rabbeim what they do with the stuff. So one of them said, I'm a sixth grade rabbi. And I started, there was something there, and I started to like mumble or something. So one of the kids said, 40 years ago, before the internet, he said, hey, listen, Rabbi, if there's something you don't know, we'll be glad to explain it to you. It's a true story, you know? So, you know, very often the kids, usually the information that they have is mishmash. That, in other words, a lot of the stuff that the kids talk about in terms of their bodies and sexuality and all of this, they have like a mishmash of incorrect or partially correct information. And giving them the ability to talk about it with you is important. So if you wanna talk about harmful content, you know, inappropriate content, it's a good conversation to have. I think it's helpful, it's more helpful if you have the courage or comfort level to have a broader conversation. Most importantly, telling him that he can talk to you about anything. There's nothing wrong with it. Come to me, I'm always available. Whichever parent, sometimes mothers are more comfortable talking to their sons about it. Sometimes fathers are, whatever, however that works. So I think it's a fair conversation, but make sure we think about what your message really is gonna be. That's really the question. What message do you want to impart? Okay, folks? I hope you found this helpful, everyone.
Oh, Rabbi Horowitz, wait, you promised us a couple stories or Divrei Torah.
Why do I feel that 25 to 2 now? I'm kibitzing. It was a beautiful vibe from, I think it was Rav Schwab, I think, right? About, yes, I am supposed to tell you about the letter with the kids, so feel free. So Rav Schwab said a beautiful, I'm talking about congruence. You see, it's very difficult for parents to tell children that they can't do something that you're doing. Okay, I'm saying that was the overall point. Now it's okay to say that, you know, I need it for business or I'm an adult and you know, but it's kind of tricky to tell kids, you know, I was never comfortable when I had conversations with our children about technology. I had a website at the time. You know, so it's really important to be congruent and saying to live. I have a brother. He's a tzaddik. He's just a wonderful person. He has an old flip phone. He's a genuinely Hasidic person. He raised his children. Everything is congruent. The schools that he sends them to and the shul that he davens in and his life at home. He treats a phone until he has email for work. He's a mashkiach in the Sifta Teres Yaakov in the Five Towns. He treats it like his wallet fell into a mud pile. You know, if you take it out and you wash it off and you just put it back in your pocket, that's how he treats the whole technology thing. Like he'd much rather not have to deal with it. I have to deal with it, I gotta go and that's it. And he raised great kids with great values because it's congruent, it's all the same. So I always say, you can raise Yankees kids, Yankee can raise Yankees kids. And Rabbi Yehuda can raise his children that's congruent with his lifestyle. It's very hard to try to raise Rabbi Yehuda's kids in Yankee's home because if you have access to technology, it's very difficult with children. I'll tell you the verse from Rosh Hashanah. Schwab says, it's a really beautiful verse. It's in Mayan Beis HaShe'eva, his Sefer on Chumash. And the thought goes like this. It says that we read the Haftarah about Shimshon's parents, Manoach. So he goes out, Manoach, his wife had a dream that the Malach came and said, you're going to have a son and he's going to be a Nazir. And he's gonna, you know, you're not gonna feed him wine and everything. And then the Malach disappears. And Manoach comes back and he says, Hashem, teach me how to raise this child. What should I do? Send me someone to tell me. So Rav Schwab says, first of all, if you wanna know how to raise a Nazir, there's a parasha in the Torah that says what to do, right? And the Malach comes back and says, do everything. Mikol asher amarti Elisha tishamer. Do everything I said, told your wife. So first of all, most people know they have to do what the wife says anyway. No, but Rav Schwab said that. Rav Schwab didn't say that. No, but so he says, what do you mean, like a Nazir? We know what to do with a Nazir. And what was the big question? He says, such a beautiful thought. He said, Hashem, you told me to do something that I should drink wine and I should tell my kid that he can't. How could you do that? That was his question. That when he said, The Malach told my wife that we're going to raise a Nazir. I mean, Nazir is someone that can't, not that voluntarily forbids, you know, refrains from drinking wine. So he said, he wasn't asking a general question, what is a Nazir? Schwab says he was asking, how can I raise a kid in a way that's not congruent? I'm going to don't touch wine, don't touch wine, don't touch wine, and while I'm not going back. So Schwab says, it's not the Pashup Shah, it's not the literal translation. He says that if you look at the words there, he said he told him, Mikol asher amarti Elisha tishamer, you should not drink wine either. But that's what he was telling him. You want to raise a kid as a Nazir, you got to walk the walk with them. That was the thought that related to that congruence. All right? Guys, have a wonderful one. I really hope you found it helpful and thought-provoking. Be well, everyone. I'll see you in a week. Take care.